support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Jonesboro, Tennessee. And we're back in time right now. We're early days.
My name is Bob Dunn. I'm a historical tour guide here that does the walking tours and some of the guides inside the buildings. Jonesboro Town was formed in 1779. That's when they, North Carolina, this was all the part of North Carolina back then, the territorial government, before we formed states. And they wanted the few people that were living here needing a place to do anything legally, marriage certificate or deed of trust for property. They would have to take a long journey from here to a little bit east of Raleigh, North Carolina, to get that done.
So again, the earliest dates here, 1776?
There were people here in the early 1700s, some settlers, some pioneers, hunters, trappers, that type of thing, that had ventured west of the Appalachians at that time.
As far as forming the town of Jonesboro?
Forming the town, 1779 is when they petitioned the territorial government of North Carolina to place a courthouse west of the Appalachians. And they picked Jonesboro, the spot here. They set aside approximately 100 acres of property and enough funds to build the first courthouse, which was a log cabin. And then Jonesboro simply expanded around this courthouse, grew exponentially around there.
And hard to conceived today, but this was the western frontier.
Wild West, really. Before, you know, we had the stagecoach routes coming from the East Coast to bring mail and people and commerce, and they all terminated here, turned around, went back. And then when the railroad started moving further west, they pushed the stagecoaches until they basically fell off into the Pacific Ocean. And then the railroads got there, and then the cars came and pretty much pushed the railroad almost off.
And back in the early days, you had some seminal characters of American history.
Yes.
Davy Crockett?
Davy Crockett, about 8 miles from here is where he was born. Actually, not born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, as Disney said, but born on Limestone Creek. He had another fellow named Daniel Boone that was through here. He was a famous pioneer and explorer. He actually was working at one time for a land company out of North Carolina, tasked mapping and opening trails through the Appalachians, so when people came west, they knew which passes and trails to take so they wouldn't get trapped in them and have to turn around and go back and start again.
And before Andrew Jackson moved on to Nashville, he lived here?
He did. He was here for almost a year. He practiced law here. And believe it or not, we have now found that we had non-Native American people in this territory in 1540, some 67 years before the forming of Jamestown Settlement in Virginia. Hernando de Soto and the Spanish Expedition.
They came all the way up here?
They came up and actually crossed a ford down here on the Nolichucky River.
Wow.
And that's just recently come to light. So it's kind of interesting that people think of Jamestown, you know, 1607, English settlement here. But these folks were here 67 years before that.
Did they find some primary source material?
Some artifacts. And in meeting with Native Americans down there, there was a large village site down there. That's actually a PBS show now, DVD.
Cool. So let's talk about the iterations of the town of Jonesboro over the years.
Well, Jonesboro, you know, you have a couple of generations of Americans that adventured here, but you also had a big European influence with people that are coming to America for various reasons to make a better life for themselves and their families and escape religious, political prosecution in the old country.
So there was opportunity for newcomers.
Sure, absolutely. They were well received. And the cool thing is that they brought a lot of their skill sets that they had much longer than we had here. You know, building techniques. There was a gold and silversmith located here that actually designed and cast the great seal for the state of Tennessee, still in use to this very day.
Oh, cool.
I believe they were German.
So you had multicultural, at least within a Northern European context.
Yes.
But we were talking earlier about how this area was not strictly the South by any means, even though Tennessee seceded. There were many pro-Northerners and anti-slavery people here.
Yes.
Even pre-Civil War.
Even pre-Civil War. You had a fair amount of free African Americans that lived here that owned property and businesses. You had very little slavery per se. You had probably more indentured white servants here than you had African-American slaves.
And what you alluded to, the first abolitionist newspaper in America was here.
Published right here on Main Street in a printing office.
It goes back 1820s?
1819 to 1820. A Caucasian Quaker, Elihu Emory, published The Emancipator, which was the first abolitionist, 100% totally anti-slavery newspaper. Was published in that printing office here on Main Street.
That's really interesting because he definitely did have some neighbors that didn't like what he was doing.
Yeah, I'm sure there were pushbacks on pros and cons, but you tend to, I think, in my readings, that Jonesboro, they kind of got along with everybody. They didn't really have a lot. I mean, there were some, obviously.
Sure.
Any time in history, you're going to find animosity to the war of one group or another. Yeah.
But it wasn't paralytic.
That wasn't, yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you had a bit of everything. You talked about the Civil War. Tennessee was the last state to secede from the Union and the first state to go back. And Northeast Tennessee actually voted not to secede from the Union. But it was carried by middle to western things, which were more of the
agrarian.
The plantation more things, where here you had a kind of a very modern urban town surrounded by small farms that didn't require slavery labor. So they didn't really have it here, so it didn't really exist
wasn't
for
an
them.
Issue,
it
yeah.
wasn't an issue.
So going forward, walk down Main Street, it appears that a majority of the buildings downtown are mid-1800s.
They are. You have some exceptions. The building that we're actually talking in now is built in 1797. It is the oldest commercial building in Jonesboro. But you'll have buildings in Jonesboro that range typically from mid-1800s to probably mid-1900s.
That the oldest hotel in Tennessee was here?
Probably this one. Oh, close to it.
Yeah.
I mean, give or take a little bit. 1797 is a long time ago.
Yeah.
And this was the end of civilization. You know, not a lot of people went further west until much later. And they actually had to stay in Jonesboro to get wagons and get their provisions together, learn how to use them. But they also had to wait for enough people that had that same idea to move further west so they could travel together in mass, mainly for protection. And that's why Jonesboro also grew economically, because it had to support rooms, places for people to eat, people to stay, wagon builders, wheelwrights, gunsmiths, provision people, clothing, everything that it would take to have you live here for a year before you move further west.
Interesting. I think as a period piece, frozen in time town, this is truly a rare place anywhere in America.
Absolutely. Kudos to the powers to be here to keep old Jonesboro as a town. Like you said, you can count them on probably one hand how many of that are left in America. And economically, it honestly doesn't make sense, because they could have turned this into a Pigeon Forge or a Gatlinburg or a Dollywood and have made a lot more money.
Yeah.
But kudos to them for keeping old Jonesboro. Mm-hmm.
And there was that intermezzo period, say 1950s and whatnot, where there were a couple buildings we walked by that they thought they'd be really cool and do this 50s new facade on them. But it's by far the exception.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a lot of these things, you know, we have a pretty ugly 1960s post office here that I think is the ugliest architecture known to man, the U.S. Post Office.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to the U.S. government, but it's horrible.
Yeah.
But it's grandfathered in, and it is part of Jonesboro's history. But the other buildings are very nice, and it also shows that they built stuff to last back then. Unfortunately, not so much anymore.
So in the current reincarnation of Jonesboro, it's a place that attracts people from all over America.
Yes. Jonesboro is a big demographic of everywhere. I would say, honestly, I believe that there's probably more transplanted Americans here than there are local Tennesseans. There's a lot. I know in the development that I live in within the town of Jonesboro, more than the majority of us are from other places, not native Tennesseans. Great place to retire. Economically, it's very nice on retirement income.
And even vacationers come from everywhere.
Right.
It's not just a Tennessee getaway.
Right. Yeah. And you're within an hour and a half drive of some of the largest cities in America that you can get into as much trouble as you want to in an hour and a half if you want to.
I think somebody was saying that in this region, You are within one day's reach of 70% of America. Americans.
Probably so.
Yeah. I mean, that's
yes, that
pretty,
makes sense.
Pretty
sure.
Incredible. And that's why Smoky Mountains National Park is the most visited
national park.
Yeah. Yes. Accessibility. One of the things that allures me here and draws me back and why I might even go sign into the university in their grad department yeah. is storytelling. The International Storytelling Center is yeah. here. That's really cool.
It is. It's located, in fact, it joins the Chester Inn where we're making this interview. Well, storytelling in Jonesboro started in 1973. A local gentleman who was born here, still lives here, has been a mayor of Jonesboro, started storytelling really to help economics in 73. We were on a kind of a downturn. And we have a building here that was the last working saloon in Jonesboro, and it has a mail pouch tobacco thing painted on the side as an advertisement. He pulled up an old wagon in front of that, set out some bales of straw, and they had about 60 people show up for the first storytelling. So it was somewhat successful in 73, and it just became a yearly function at that point. Storytelling today happens the first full weekend in October. Now, unfortunately, this year and last year, it had to be virtual because of COVID. But before that, that long weekend, you would have 15 to probably 20, 25,000 people here in Jonesboro.
And it literally is an international storytelling.
Now stories are from everywhere. Storytellers come from everywhere in the world. Their performances can be.
And I met a long time ago your executive director, I think it is. And he's what, probably originally India?
He's India.
Yeah. So literal international.
Yes. But people from all over. And, you know, they block off this entire town. Mm-hmm. You can't drive in it. You have to be bussed in from outside. They set up in all the parks and the parking lots these huge circus tent type things.
And you also have the main headquarters.
Main headquarters.
That they have the theater inside
there.
Have
a small theater. It seats about 100 people. Uh-huh. But the tents will seat 3,000 plus people. And wow. they'll, from dawn until after midnight, people move from tent to tent, listen to their favorite storytellers. It's remarkable.
That's really cool. And Eastern Tennessee State University has a graduate program in storytelling.
That they do. They have storytelling curriculum.
I want to sign up for that. I really do.
We actually have a museum study in Tuscombe down here, don't we? Walter State has museum studies. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of their people that come in and tour and talk about and train here and stuff. So it's a big deal.
That's really cool. Let's loop back to your world, the history of Jonesboro. A legacy, a gift that was left to you by people, time, place, photographers who lived here.
We're lucky that on Main Street in Jonesboro, we've had a photographer. The oldest known photograph that we have in our archives is 1850. So we've had a photographer on Main Street since really the beginning of photography. Mm-hmm. So we're fortunate as historians to have a huge archive there that we can go back and see what everything looked like. Honestly, it helps historical zoning too, because if you own or purchase a historic building, you're restricted as to what you can do on the outside. Inside, a lot more leeway, but if you go before the board and you have these grandiose plans that you think you want to change it to, they'll just pull out a photograph of the original building and tell you to make it look like that. And in the conversation, you make it look like that.
Yeah.
But from history, it really helps us to see what it looked like. And to be honest with you, on the historic district, not a lot has changed.
Yeah.
It looks the same.
Well, that's kind of the positive benefit of the authoritarian, strict, literal history interpretation. Mm-hmm. It served you well today.
Yes.
In that this is one of the rare places where you can step back in time, literally. And we talked about a Disney movie that was filmed here,
where
they literally put dirt on the streets and turned it back, 1850s or
yes,
something?
Yes, Civil War.
Yeah.
Louis Gossett Jr. was in that.
In the name of the movie?
Goodbye, Miss 4th of July.
And that's probably available somewhere on Netflix or somewhere.
It's hard to find.
Yeah.
I actually have one that's been converted to DVD or something like that.
Yeah.
We've converted. So But it's, like you said, it was made for TV, so it wasn't popular, and it wasn't really a popular service, especially for Disney, especially for Disney.
Because it was an anti-slavery theme in there, right?
Well, it was after the Civil War, but there was the KKK.
The KKK was in it, so yeah. That usually doesn't happen in very many Disney movies.
Yeah. One more special, closest to your heart story that you would like to share about history and Jonesboro.
I guess one of my favorite characters, probably my favorite character, is Alfred Ray, an African-American who his mom was a slave that later became a physician, a very highly intelligent lady, very much read, and owned by a doctor and his family, originally as a housekeeper and an assistant, but became a doctor. After the Civil War, he was freed along with the family. Not really much holding him here to Jonesboro, and he left and he became...
This is the son of the black physician.
Yes. She actually had twin African-American sons. One became a brick mason, and he was basically in charge of building the 1847 courthouse. So he was instrumental in doing that. Alfred joined the army, became a Buffalo soldier, and he was out west fighting Native Americans, fought in many skirmishes there, southern Canada, Mexico, central South America, Caribbean. He was in charge of an African-American company of men. He was a color sergeant, and he carried the American flag out front. Honestly, they used these guys typically as first in battle because they believed they were expendable. It was a segregated army. He ended up in Cuba fighting along Theodore Roosevelt's Rough Riders, and they made the assault on San Juan Hill, and he planted the American flag on San Juan Hill, taking that. So became an American hero that most people have never heard of. Stayed in the army till he was forced to retire for age, came back to Jonesboro and lived the rest of his days here as owning a wagon shop and a wheelwright shop, and is buried in the old city cemetery here in Jonesboro, along with his mom, and I'm not sure about his brother. Buried up there?
His buried brother, yeah.
Okay. But he's buried there with full military honors. So just interesting demographics as to people and what they did, why they did it. Jonesboro is a hodgepodge of history that most people didn't think existed, especially in the South.
So definitely anybody with any curiosity about American history, a must-do to come to Jonesboro.
Must-do. Yeah. It's still fascinating to me, being a transplant. I learn stuff every day that I didn't know, and I'm still totally amazed by this little town and what actually happened here.
Yeah. Well, this is my second trip here, and I'm glad to be back.
Awesome. We thank you for coming.
Yeah. Okay, if somebody wanted to learn more about Jonesboro and its history.
You can contact us. We are the Heritage Alliance. The director, my boss here, you can contact her, or we have heritagealliance.org. Is that it?
Heritageall.org.
So that would be one way of connecting.
Which is?
Heritageall.org. You can contact us. We're tasked with running the museum systems here, the Old City Cemetery, two museums, the Railroad Museum, and a salvage warehouse where we keep...
Yeah, a moment on that. That's fascinating. That's archival preservation of actual flooring, siding, trim, doorknobs. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we try to obtain old buildings or parts of old buildings that are going to be raised anywhere and put those pieces, parts in this warehouse. Mm-hmm. So with people that are restoring buildings and need to patch floors, or they need a door or a hinge or a door lock or a window, they can come to us and we could probably help them out with it, because we keep a lot of that stuff there, and that's getting almost impossible to find anymore.
It's not profit-driven.
It's not profit-driven. It's to maintain history, maintain buildings. We're not in the... Being a historian, you're not in the business to make money. You know, you're lucky to make a living, but you're not there to become rich. You got to love what you're doing, and that's what it's about. My name is Bob Dunn. I'm a historical tour guide here that does the walking tours and some of the guides inside the buildings. We have 4 to 6 of us that do tours here. We also have docents that work and answer questions in the museum systems, and we could sub out for that too. We give not only scheduled tours, but we also do private tours, a lot of private tours. If you just want to call in and you can't be here on a day that a scheduled tour makes, or is weather permitted, You can call us and we can make arrangements to have you a tour guide and give you a private tour of whatever you want to see here.
Love it. Thanks for sharing. It's great to be with you today.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you being with us too.
My pleasure. Mm-hmm. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Jonesboro, Tennessee. We'll see you there.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.